give that shit up, you can concentrate on golf.
If you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball.
Great moments are born from great opportunity.
You play ball like a girl!
Hi everybody and welcome to A Roy Orbison Tattoo with me, Cullum, and my co-hosts, Massey and Paul. This is episode 6 of season 2. If it is your first time listening, I would advise to go back to the start and listen from episode 1, as we will refer to previous shows from time to time. The show does contain film spoilers, so if you have not yet seen the film, I would advise watching it first. It might help you understand a little bit better. And now for today's show, I hope you enjoy. So I'm delighted to say we are joined with Jamie Wall today, and we are going to review Dodgeball, a true underdog story. Thanks very much for coming on, Jamie.
Phone call. Good to be here. How are you, lads?
How are you, Jamie? How are you getting on?
Good to see you.
Good. It's all the pleasantries done and dusted with. And look, I suppose we your first foray into coaching led to a tweet with a bag of wrenches.
Yeah, I suppose there's a lot of context to that. I suppose for anyone that is unaware of my own story, I took up coaching a little bit earlier than most, at the age of 22. When I was 21, I suffered a spinal injury and from playing, obviously enough. And after 8 months in hospital, came home in fit and used a wheelchair. So the most neglected teams in a lot of clubs are the under 21 teams, and that's our own club for the last couple of years. So they were obviously without a management, and the situation in Cork is obviously, you know, we kind of in the middle of the summer, and I said that I take the 21s, and I just kind of, there was an element of steering into it with the whole wheelchair coach thing that Patches O'Houlihan, was that that fella that turns up in Dodgeball and wheels in on the electric wheelchair, and they're kind of like, who the hell is this guy? He comes out of the smoke. But I suppose that was my his famous first line. It was like, shouldn't we learn? Is it, your man says, shouldn't we learn by dodging balls and or dodging, you throwing dodgeballs at us? And he throws down a sack, which is, that's what this sack of wrenches is for. It's like, if you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball, and you just fires one at one of the lads' heads. So my tweet was, if you can catch a wrench, you can catch a slitter. So like I said, it was just a case of steering into the skid day one. I didn't realise it would come back to bite me, what, five years ago, I didn't know, having to justify my actions on a podcast.
Not at all. I suppose, like, Patches, what I was on Wikipedia or Wiki whatever, and I said Patches is a foul-mouthed, encouraging coach, and I'm also cranky in that. Would you see similarities in yourself in those skill sets or those sets skill sets?
One or two, yeah. I'm gonna try and make it through the whole year without cursing. That's I've kind of been given out a few times, a few different podcasts, like second captains, and I've done a few things with off the ball where I've ended up throwing in the odd curse word just from spending too much time around my peers and forgetting myself. But
you don't have to forget yourself here, Jamie. You're okay.
Definitely that one. And the foul-mouthed side of it is definitely an occasional vice of mine. But I would think encouraging as well, you know, generally. I think there was a couple of Patches lines that I always like to identify that he was very much, if I want to go and beat them, coach, like, I think his last words in his famous last words were, tomorrow we're going to pecker slap those Globo gym bastards. I think, you know, that's the kind of coach that I like to be, try and building up the opposition.
But like, I think that's actually something very important with him, is that, like, you know, what you're saying about foul motor and air, like, some teams will respond to, not abusive, but, you know, just a bit of kind of crack and a bit of thing, whereas other teams mightn't respond to that at all. Like,
yeah, in my own experience, I think, you know, just judging with the kind of teams I've been involved with, and there's been a fierce array, like, you know, I've done a bit of work with underage development squads. I've done some stuff with Mary I with the college there, you know, so with kind of that 19 to 23 age. And obviously, in the last couple of years, I've done a bit of club, a bit of kind of senior seniors, kind of senior age stuff between Kilmallock and home club Kilbrit.
Just when you go back there, so you said you took up your teams and you're on 22 and under 21 side. How did you find dealing like with lads you would have played with all the way up, like only a year or two younger than you? How did you get your authority there?
To be honest, it actually was a non, because that 21s team in particular was a very weak age in the club. So of our starting 15, we had 12 of them were actually minor. Okay. You know, so it was nominally a 21s team, but it was actually a minor team playing 20s. So really there was little to no peer crossover. I think I had two fellas on the squad that I had previously played with, you know. It wasn't really an issue with that age group. But I think in the last year, that's really come to a head for me. In the last months, I've taken over the intermediates at home in Kilburton. And, you know, there I'm dealing with guys that I played with all my life underage. I'm dealing with guys that were much older than me, you know, guys that I've been looking up to for a couple of years before now. Kind of being in that role reversal, you know, even a couple of guys who would have coached me on underage teams before. Yeah. So, but look, that's not actually even the first time that's happened to me. Gavin O'Mahony from Kilmallock coached me in Mary Eye as a hurler in Cup. And then we worked together coaching in Mary Eye, and then we worked together with me coaching him in Kilmallock. So it's kind of just, you know, I'm well used to flitting in and out of that kind of fluid role with lads and stuff. And, I find, you know, that's kind of the nature of being young in this game, is that there's going to be a little bit of crossover, you know, that you've to kind of, like, you know, you're not going to be the father of any teams for a good number of years yet. Yeah. So you just try to roll with the kind of advantages that relationship has. And I think, you know, to bring it back to a small bit to patches, like, you know, they're a bit more relatable to the lads in that sense. You know, you behave like them in a lot of ways, and, you know, obviously that has its disadvantages and stuff, but there's huge advantages to it as well, because, you know, you get what's going on leaves. And not that I've been bringing anyone to my room to celebrate with hookers or anything. It's like, yeah, it's a suit yourself, isn't it? I've got some hookers in my room if you want to go celebrate. We haven't we've kept the celebrations far more PG than that. Yeah, there might be a job in Ballyragan in the next couple of years.
Yeah, that's the call there, though. Ballyragan, if you want him, he's available. Or he's, well, I don't know about available, but interested.
Negotiate well there.
Yeah, and I suppose like all of us, we're all... Well, I consider us all, I know you're way younger than us, Jamie, but the rest of us, well, maybe not massive, but myself and Paul, we're still young and we're involved with coaching.
Hold on, I'm about a year older than you.
Sure, 2 years at least. Okay, but I suppose, maybe. But like, even that, like, we all transitioned from playing to coaching through work, I suppose, with us. But like, for I suppose, one of the things that we'd see in the GA an awful lot, especially with, let's say, smallies now, would be... A player, let's say he'd be in his 30s, might have a 5 or 6 year old child, he'd go down, he'd be dragged into the club as the coach. And a lot of the time, the skill set that he's bringing isn't, I suppose, fit for what the purpose is with kids of that age group. Like, and Massey, I know you'd be up in the nursery a good bit with your kids, like, but, and I suppose not as much of an issue in Nafina being a big club, but in country clubs, we kind of see that once a fella has a child, you're right, you're coaching that team without helping him or her be any skills to do it.
Yeah. And like, coaching at that age is like, it's so different. Like, it's a different game almost. Like, it's a different thing totally. Like, the other thing is, like, your motivations have to be very different, because if they're not, then you're doing it for the wrong reasons. And like, you know, the way you interact with kids at that age has to be so, so different. You know, like we were saying, you're like, you know, the way you can interact with kind of young adults, you know, there tends to be a bit of sarcasm and that kind of side of it. But, you know, when you're dealing with kids age groups, that was actually, my internet got dodgy a minute ago. I was trying to make the point that working with the development squads, then, you know, you can have a little bit of crack with them, but you do have to kind of remember that it's a much younger age group. It's kids you're dealing with. And I suppose when it comes to coaching, you know, I know the bigger clubs would have nursery level kind of, and would be better set up for that. Like, but you know, for us, it's sixes and eights and tens and twelves even. you know, it's a sea change in attitude. It has to be. But I think, like you said, we don't probably equip our volunteers remotely enough, because realistically, like, even look, I'm a qualified primary school teacher, and I would be out. I'm a qualified primary school teacher who has been coaching for a number of years, and I honestly think I'd be out of my depth if I went trying to coach 8-year-olds. Like give me, you know, a county senior team tomorrow morning. I'm not saying I do very well at them, but I definitely do better than I would with the local 10-year-olds. Like, it's a totally different job, you know. It's easier, exactly. So like, I think it's something that as clubs we probably have to be a lot more focused on, is, you know, being smart, being careful, and then providing the supports, people that would try to, you know, like you said, rope in and drag into those. But like, it's hugely important, because like, Jesus Christ, like you're watching the habits of us. It's incredible. Like, when they form the habit by 12 years age, like, you are going to have a really hard time trying to break that habit if it's a bad one, you know, and trying to help that habit and trying to you know, just an example, something that I was really happy with the other day. Like, we trained last weekend in our pods of 15 and non-contact with our under 21s. Now we've had to call it all off now in the last 24 hours, but I stuck around for an hour after just to watch the under 12 training that was going on. And it was just, you know, football shooting. And like, we wouldn't be really a football club, but it was just something that I noticed, that all the young lads, they were just doing shots after left, shots after right. And they were made to take the same amount from each. And they were all dropping the ball. I found it amazing. They were all dropping the ball. This might sound stupid to someone, like, but for our club, like, I was dropping the ball onto their left foot with their left hand. And I was like, Jesus, we were never taught that at 11 years of age. Like, we were just swing that foot at it there and you'll be fine. Like, kind of try and make contact with it. Like, whereas these young lads were actually getting proper habits. Like, and I was just like, I was kind of like, Jesus, right, that's not bad. That's impressive. That's why our under 12s are the next, probably, that we have, the next, not decent, but the next strong team that we have coming up. Like, is that someone obviously working with that age group at 8 and 10 and 12 had those fundamentals and was, you know, aligned to say this is the things that are important with these lads, you know.
And in an ideal world, now I know what's happened is that coach you said probably had them at under 8, 10, under 12, not that we know that he was. Mm. Ideally, you'd nearly like him to go back under 8s again.
Yeah.
And just keep that continuity going between 8, 9, 12. So then when they all that age, they all have that skill set. So when they progress under 14, 16, etc. So you have a conveyor belt throughout the club. I was going to say, I see myself, like, there's certain coaches you come across who are just brilliant, I say, under 10 and under 12. Mm. And they love coaching on the age group, and they've no interest in going on to under 14 or adult 16, whatever it is. Are you one of them, Colin?
They're gracefully taken under 16 before an adult team,
I said good coaches, Colin. And then there's other lads there who might be the best coaches, you said yourself, the best coaches at adult level, and they communicate with a 7-year-old whatsoever.
Like, it's different. In fairness, Mossy, like, that should probably come as no surprise, given that we've looked at that all our lives. You know, like, again, like, I always refer back to primary teaching when I talk about coaching, but because it's the most relevant thing in the world. But like, if you go into my mom's school where I did a bit of teaching before, the same 3 and 4 generally teach somewhere between junior infants and first class, and they never really go above it, and they never go beyond it. And after a certain while, it's that teacher is just better at infants than someone else.
Yeah.
And then there's teachers that are just better at the 6th class. You know, they just, when it comes to dealing with 6th class and all the troubles that an 11, 10, 12 year old presents, they're way better at that. And like, there's no shame in, you know, actually being able to say that person is actually just better with them than anyone else. And like, that's where they're going to have the maximum impact for our club, is, you know, at this exact thing, or, you know. And obviously, like, I think it's important that people don't just get pigeonholed and spend 20 years just doing that, like, because they also probably need to learn a little bit about what's demanded of a 13-year-old in 2020 versus what's demanded of a 13-year-old in things to better prepare those 10-year-olds. So I think there's never any harm in in pushing these people to the, you know, slightly outside their comfort zone so that they can see, how can I better prepare these 8, 9, 10 year olds? And again, this is, I'm talking about school, but I could be talking about hurling, football, about any of these things, because they're all interchangeable. Like, and like, it's just teaching. I've said that so many times, and I stand over till the day I die. Like, you're just teaching hurling and football, or, you know, soccer or rugby or whatever your sport is. You're just teaching that set sport. You know, it's no different to teaching maths or teaching English or teaching Irish. Like, you know, generally the best practice with a bit of adaptation is still the best practice. Like, and that goes for organizations like a school or a club or whatever the case may be.
Absolutely. And it actually goes back to a line in the film where, I can't remember who said it there now, I think it must have been Patrick, who goes, the best way of learning a sport is playing it anyway.
Yeah.
And I think it's the same for sports. We learn by actually playing a sport, in terms of coaches not getting over, what's like Mickey Whelan's great line is, you come across Mickey much, Jamie?
Only once or twice now. I actually met him once at a coaching conference in Croke Park.
And he's a brilliant, brilliant line where he goes, how do you learn to play by playing the effing piano? Yeah. So it's true, like I was saying, like how, like, you can talk about hurling or football all day long, but as long as the kids start playing, if that's what they're going to do, they're learning. It's the same in school when you're talking about, when you're teaching stuff, you get things. So I thought that was a good line from the film.
Yeah.
I suppose, like, while we're talking about under 16 and senior getting the coach back, it's a small bit like the film in that average Joe's would be a people-centered gym. You know, there always, one of the lines was, failure is an option. It lets you learn from our mistakes, whereas Global Gin is completely kind of results driven. You can kind of see the difference there with, if like the kind of the way that LeFleur is kind of, you know, he's kind of all happy and, you know, do your best, yeah, sure, it's grand. Whereas Global Gin is kind of completely fucking driven. Like, this is how we do it. We're going to do it, do it, do it. And like
Big Brother kind of element with all the screens, like, quit slacking, Trevor. I'm watching you.
Yeah. You know, so you could, it was interesting there. And the other, I suppose, the other thing that from the start of the film was, I don't know, did any of you see the picture at the back of White's office? See the bull, was he grabbing the bull by the horns?
The bull by the horns.
The bull by the horns. That's a metaphor for how he handles his business.
That really
happened though.
It reminds me of a time in Pamploma when there was a bull coming to get Paul and he grabbed him by the horns. But that's a story for another day and another podcast.
Results-driven. In terms of that results-driven thing, you obviously see White Goodman and he starts off, we'll say, morbidly obese, gets in great shape, and then by the end, morbidly obese as well. And if you're taking that results-driven approach all the time and it's just about hitting a certain target at a certain time and it's not sustainable in terms of what's being asked of people, you'll revert back into, I suppose, poor habits, etc. So, like, the average way of doing things well and enjoying it all the time is probably a better focus of having in terms of that gym or sport as well.
Creating a more rounded individual, is it?
Even what you're saying there about that results-driven, you know, for Global Gym, that results-driven, we'll say, culture, where he reverts back to type at the end. Like, the point is almost that he reverts to type after failure. And that, you know, with a results-driven culture is that if it's results-driven, it's all well and good as long as you're winning. But the minute you lose, it's built on sand. And like, when you go to sport at the high level, at the low level, at club level, at whatever, if you, you know, like, let's just say, in Cork hurling this year, we'd say there's five hurling grades before junior, right? And there's 12 teams in each. So that's what, 60 teams? 60 teams. If you are results driven, purely results driven, nothing but results driven, that means only 5 out of 60 teams at the end of the year can turn around and say, we had a successful year this year. And if only 5 out of the 60 there can say that, then what are the other 55 saying at the end? And if you're results driven, how long does that last? You know, like, if those other 55 teams, panels of 30 to 40 players, whatever it is, if they at the end of the year, well, we didn't win, so this was an utter failing but a failure, then you know, like you, it's you're not going to have, well, you're not going to have 60 teams anyway after so long, you know. Whereas when you're dealing with a person-centered approach and kind of a, rather than a results-centered kind of, you know, a structured goal-centered approach, would say that that people can achieve, you know, like, because at the end of the day, in team sports and individual sports, when it comes to competitive sports, only one, it's like we're going into another film, like it's like the Highlander, you know, there's one. So like there can only be one winner there. But if there can only be one winner there, then that essentially means that everyone else has wasted their time, which obviously isn't conducive to sort of long-term kind of coaching philosophy or any sort of long-term even just development or, you know, anything meaningful long-term.
Yeah, and like I suppose we would have actually spoke about that. I can't remember what episode, but like if we're only judging, like you said, if we're only judging winning as the, or getting the cup at the end and everyone else is a failure, like we're, as you said, we're in a bad place. And it will lead to that mess. That's like, that's where I suppose when we see it with numbers and fall off rates would come once we start going to Fela and minor. Mm. And, you know, when those kind of massive numbers drop off is because it goes from goal games, which is everybody gets equal game time. It's as fair as possible. We 7-a-side, 9-a-side, 11-a-side, lots of game time. Mm. And all of a sudden at under 14, sorry, Jamie, you're not good enough. You're a sub today. Like that's only so many times you can say that to someone before Dale.
Yeah.
They'll not come back. And and I suppose what we've been trying to do and what the GA have been trying to do, and like I suppose we spoke about it, what was it, 2 weeks ago? Was it American? No, what was it about community lads? Was it last week? Yeah,
Friday Night Lights.
Yeah, 2 weeks ago with Stephen, like about building a community and that the value the club can have to the greater community, not just those playing, can be hugely important. And the GA, I suppose, with the likes of the All-Stars, which are the for the children with disabilities, with, you know, super game centres, with like maximising participation as much as possible, with healthy clubs policies and stuff like that, with walkways, the Ireland Under Lights there, with the Operation Transformation. That's all about community. And what happens on the pitch doesn't really affect that. Where still the club can still bring so much positive stuff to the community by providing these other things. And I think in fairness, you'll have a lot of players, I suppose, at senior level and adult coaches and stuff like that. They're driven by success. That's what they'll deem as success, is winning or losing. But everybody else in the club are seeing more tangible gains out of it. And I suppose that's the important thing as a coach, is that we're able to give kids and give players a meaning other than winning. You know, if we do maximise our ability, so let's say Kilbritton, now this year, Jamie, you got the county semi-final. Did you hit the max of your ability, or were you close enough to it? And if you can say that every year, you know, if there's just happens to be a better team, so be it.
And that was it. And like, you know, we got to our semi-final and we lost to a better team on the day. You know, like we'd be kicking ourselves all winter about it. Like, but you know, in talking to a few of the lads in days and a few days after the game, like, you know, they all just said, geez, they were good. But Christ, we were way better this year than we were last year. She's like, we're getting there. We'll be there next year. Geez, I'd love to play them again next year. I'd love to get a crack off someone like them again next year. And you're kind of saying, you know what? There you go. Like, yeah, we lost to a decent team in a competitive semi-final. For us, like, this year was a tangible success. Came up at the end of the year, but like, you know, for us, it was and again, for me as a manager, like last year, we had, I think we were 24, 25, you know, and this was when there was no restrictions on panels, getting in there for do or die relegation games, barely calling up 18-year-olds that didn't want to be part of a panel for some reason or another. And all of a sudden this year, we fielded, you know, comfortably fielded two teams and had an overall panel of 43 players between our intermediate and junior team, you know.
That's a success.
For me, like, you know, all winter we had the bones of 35, but I think we had an average of 34 for every training session this year. Like, for me, that's success, given that in years gone by, I've played on teams where, like, you spend the whole summer looking around at 12 and 13 lads of training, and it's demoralising, and it's kind of like, why am I doing this into this? Like, and it was never about winning at times. Like, obviously at the end of the day, when you play that game, it's about winning. But like, you know, the times when I felt most low about what I was doing at club level, and when I felt most low about kind of, Jesus, like, am I mad coming down hours from college here to be playing this and trying that? It wasn't when we were winning or losing. It was when I was feeling like the effort wasn't being made, and whether, you know, at playing level, because, you know, as a group of players, we all had to accept a lot of responsibility around, or whether it was a coaching level or what was, like, it was obviously a little from column A and a little from column B at times. And I just, this year, one of my big kind of goals at the start of the year was that, you know, we were starting a panel with 44 at the start of the year, and that we'd have, it was close to 40 there at the end of the year, fellas that had bought in what we were trying to do, that had fun with what we were trying to do, that obviously would see improvements with what we're trying to do. Because, like, let's not, like, we talk nice here about, you know, development and all these other things. At the end of the day, you still do want to win the games, like, you know. But that lads would feel like, you know what, I'm getting better. I'm becoming a better player here. We're becoming a better team. We're getting a little bit better. Like, if we could say all those things at the end of the year, it was going to be happy one way or another. Like, and then the ultimate goal of winning a county title or not at the end of the year, like, only once a grade to do that every year, you know. As we've said, like, I've that nauseam, like, you know, it doesn't mean everyone else wasn't a success. It's just a case of, you know, how can you, like you said, get the most out of your group? And that's in a lot of ways. That's as a group, like, you know, what can you get out of your second team? How can you bring your second team to as high a standard as possible? How can you make, you know, the forward on your second team who wasn't making your club minors last year, which is a fact, like, you know, wasn't making our club minor team last year, all of a sudden our second string team, he's actually getting into the team, getting there through just, you know, sticking at it, hard work, and actually improving a little bit. And, like, you know, these guys, like you said, you know, like you said there earlier, at 14, you turn around to Jamie and say, you're not good enough, you're not getting on. And there's only so many times you can say that to a fella. And that is absolutely true. But I think the more important thing is, you know, what do you say to a fella after you say, right now, you're not good enough? Like, you know, do you go and make an effort with that same young fella training? Because a lot of kids, when they get to 15, 16, 17, 18, in my experience, they don't actually mind championship day comes, the best 15 being on the field. You know, some of your best supporters are some of your subs. But what they want is, they want to feel respected. They don't want to feel at training like, he doesn't even talk to me. He doesn't even, like, fuck, like, I may as well not be there. Like, they, as long as you respect, you know, you treat them with respect, you engage with them, you try to make them better every day you go coaching them. At the end of the day, like, you know, obviously they need to get adequate game time when it comes to league and challenge games, you know. But if you respect that young fella and actually put in an effort with them, they tend to respond, even if they're not ultimately getting that championship game. Or at least, in, I found that, you know, at adult level with ours in the last year, like, that even the fellas who weren't getting a game, as long as you, you know, showed them the respect of, you know, trying to improve them every day you went back out training, and, you know, when they talk to you about not getting on, that you could actually give them, you know, things that you think, look, you need to get better at this and this, and this is my job as a coach, instead of just what some coaches do, which, you know, for me is a big bugbear, is basically, once you're not in the plans, you're just a body, you know, you're a number on the back of a shirt, and you're just there to kind of fill in training games, and, like, you're just not engaged with in the same way as other guys. And I think that's something that in a squad is hugely important. And, like, you know, if we're coming back to the team, like, you know, they're not all Peter LaFleur's in that team, like, but at the end of it, like, it wasn't Justin Long was left on his own in one of the crunch games, the fella, yeah, that Justin, yeah, Long plays, drags, yeah, him out of a hole. Like, he's that second string wing forward that, you know, he grabs some ball that you're like, God, I can't believe he's done that, like, and actually hand passed it to who stuck it over the bar. And that's the score that wins you some, you know, that's the score that wins you a game, or wins you a thing, that you're like, Jesus, like, all those hours of actually making that fella a small bit better is the only reason we actually got over the line there. You know, I think things like that are you know, like when it comes to dealing with a squad, are hugely important. And, like, you know, the value of keeping them there, but making them feel respected and making them feel wanted to be there, like, is huge. Like, and, you know, it's massive in a club. Like,
as you said, there, the key word there is respect. As you said, them guys, if you feel like they're part of the team, part of the club, like, a lot of these guys who don't get, not a lot of these guys who might get game time, but they feel part of the club and feel valued. Mm. They could be fantastic administrators in time. They could be the coaches in the future. Like we talked about it before. So like if they're keen, like treat everybody with respect. You don't know what they're going to do in the future. They could dig you out of the hole like he did in the dodgeball game, or he could be the future secretary of the club or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But I think it's very, very important that 1 to 30, if you have a squad of 30, that you treat them all well, you get to know the names, you get to know them like you would with your star.
Yeah, and like I think one of the things you mentioned there, Jamie, was about you making the effort to get down for training, like, you know, when you're coming to thing. And I suppose in the film, at the end, Peter LaFleur got offered $100,000, and he took the $100,000. But he got offered $100,000 to basically sign over the gym. And he took the $100,000, but he gambled it back on the team winning, you know. And I suppose it's important, like, that to recognize that the GA is built on volunteers who are given up a huge amount of individual opportunities, as in, and what I mean by that is just the time. Like, Jamie, if I ask you to come down and coach a team in Kilbritton, the time that's needed for you.
Opportunity cost.
Yeah. Is that the proper term, is it?
That's what we're studying now. Yeah. Never know.
And like, I suppose it's something that's completely taken for granted a lot of the time, in that, like, we talk about the volunteers being the fellows who do the lines and cut the grass and all that, but the players are the volunteers as well. The players are giving up hours and hours of their time to travel to matches in the backboards of beyonds. And I suppose, like, as you said, we have to respect that, like.
Big time, yeah. And like, you know, like I said, no, like, I'm at pains to say it, like, you obviously have to respect your players that are playing, and that, like, and that extends to a lot of your carry on with them on the field and stuff. But, you know, they are nearly as pleased in general, like, you know, in that, like, if your panel don't feel wholly respected and wholly there, then you're at nothing, because eventually then, you know, it ends up affecting your star players, because those panelists stop turning up, and then all of a sudden, you know, you're in that position, like I said, where you're coming down 2 hours road from Limerick and there's only 15 lads of training or 16 lads of training. It's kind of it's a bigger balancing act, you know, and it's something that I suppose at club level requires a lot more tact, we'll say, you know, and a lot more kind of engagement, like I said, and genuine kind of respect. It's like, you know, at county level and at that elite level, you know, everyone that's there really, really wants to be there. And also everyone that's there has a kind of a degree of confidence in their own ability to whatever degree it is. Like, you know, it's the guy will say want to be there at club level, but have never, will say, been that person who gets lauded and stuff, like, you know, that you just you really have to try and create just an environment where they feel that they're getting a fair crack at it with, you know. That was just one thing that, you know, one or two players said to me this year that I was very happy with, you know, was a guy who was just playing on our junior team, who wasn't playing last year, would say our second team would have, like any club, country club, we'll say, get together, and then some scatter of four or five fellas would come in from the cold to make up the numbers in the second team. And what often ended up actually happening was, you know, some of the fellas who come in from the cold and not been training and not been doing anything might actually be slightly better players, and they'd go straight in, you know. And we just made a rule this year that anyone that was a part of the intermediate panel was basically entitled to their game at second level ahead of anyone outside of that 40. So basically, like, if you had been, it wasn't that we were excluding people from panel all, because at the start of the year it was like not ability based. If you're willing to put in the effort, you can be part of the panel. That was basically it. Like, if you're willing to do the runs, it doesn't matter how far behind you are in the runs, once you're finishing them, you're allowed to be on the panel, you know. And once you're doing them, once you're turning up, you can be on. And once you're on that panel, you are entitled to a game ahead of someone who's not on that panel. So we weren't excluding guys who weren't making the commitment from representing the club, but we were, someone who does make the commitment is getting their game from the start, and that's it. And it was just something that I think, you know, made a difference to our kind of our 20 to 23 kind of bracket with some fellas that had been coming up, and we maybe felt in the last couple of years where they weren't getting a fair crack at the whip, when, you know, they were the ones making up numbers with, say, in training games. They were the ones who, you know, who weren't quite at the level of making the first team and were just there, thereabouts in the second team. And then someone who was coming in from the cold, elected ahead of them, and it was kind of, it ended up, it was destroying us as a club because it was killing the numbers overall, because then them young fellas were saying, sure, what am I bothering my ass training with the lads for? And then when push comes to shove, we'll say Johnny from down the road comes back in and he goes in full forward for the juniors, like, you know? Right. So it was just something that kind of at the start of the year that a few of us spoke, we kind of, you know, felt very passionately about, that it was just an overall big picture thing for the club, that, you know, and like you said, that kind of respect element that, you know, we put together a squad. And like, and this, all this, we actually have a third team in hurling, would you believe it? We've 70 registered adult players, like, for the size of us, like, we've a third team playing. So it's not that we were taking hurling off the fellas who just wanted the social side of it, like, they had a team, but that we were saying the young fellas who want to come down and train and really put in the effort, they're going to get first crack at the whip with the second team, especially, you know, when, and that it was going to be about more than just that final result. It was going to be about that process side of it. And like, and if you were willing to put in the yards, like, that you get the fair crack at the whip. So like, that was that kind of person-centered approach, I suppose, that we were talking about, you know, and that was what we were really going for. Like, so something that I thought was definitely really
good. It's a good idea, that.
We talked about that previously there, about having that joint up thinking across the team in the club. So obviously you're after talking about there that Kilbritton had three teams, and there's probably fellas on the tour team who are better than fellas who are playing on the second team. But if they're putting the effort in, and there might be a fella who's 18 or 19 who could eventually progress on to being onto the top team, that's the best way of doing, that is doing it. Because sometimes I think if the teams are operating independently and we have a dictator looking after a team who only cares about his 15 or 20 players or whatever, that isn't good for the long term. Also, there's strong benefits in that, all right.
In the club, yeah. And like, it's just something that, again, you know, I suppose in terms of, it's a culture thing in a club, you know, like for us, it was something that was very important this year, was that, like, for me, going in as the intermediate manager, like, and it added probably to my workload, but something that I really wanted to be seen to be doing was to be at junior games, you know, and to be seen to be at the junior games and to be involved in a, like, I didn't want to be overbearing on the junior set, but I did want to be seen to be clearly an interested party, so that, you know, when I leave a fellow out of the intermediate team and he doesn't game, that he doesn't just feel like, ah, sure, doesn't matter now in this junior first round, you know. I firmly believe that the long-term health of the club can only improve by the low level being higher, if that makes sense. Because you look at the two county champions in Cork and Tip this year. The Cork county champion second team played Premier Intermediate Hurling this year. The Tip county champion second team played senior Seamus O'Rean Hurling in Tip this year. That just cannot be a coincidence, you know.
Coolie, the same in Dublin as well.
Senior A, weren't they?
Final, yeah.
So like, that is no coincidence, you know. You look at the overall health of a club. I look at Limerick here, you know. I'm looking at being built the last couple of years, and I actually live in the estate where the clubhouse is. But I've been involved with Kilmallock. But they're in Napiershig's second team for the last 2 years has always been a good intermediate team. So when they were going, you know, when they get an injury, like we say Dowling get injured, they called in a Will Henn, who was actually hurling intermediate with UCC at the time, which is no joke, and playing well for them, is actually on his panel. Your own Will Henn came into the team off the intermediates. I'm pretty sure he was man in the match against us in a county semi-final. And I'm just there like, oh my God, like, this lad is playing second team hurling. And they put him straight on the freeze. I actually went straight on the freeze because he was taking the freeze for intermediates. So they lost their free taker. They said, oh yeah, that's grand. We'll replace him with the intermediates free taker. Up he goes. I think he scored 10 or 11 points against us, like, straight away. And I was just kind of saying, wow, there's depth there. Like, you know, and like, you know, you look at Napiershig this year, they're the, you know, they ran away with the Limerick Championship for a finish. Like I said, Black Rock, when it kept bringing on subs, like, their subs made such a huge difference in that Cork County final. It was unbelievable. Like, Alan Connolly, he was playing for Cork and Terry. He played his first round of adult championship last year against our club, the intermediate. You know, and all of a sudden he's man of the match in the county final 15-16 months later.
There in a previous podcast there where it's important for them lads who might be say 18, 19, 20, 21 years of age, who are like 23, 24 in your panel, that they're actually getting good competitive game time at the team level, that they're not just falling through the gap, that they're making up knowing your teams and not getting games for competitive games. That so I think it's vital that they're playing, like just you mentioned there, like how strong Turlough Moore and Galway this year, for example, got to the county senior final and got to a semi-final to intermediate championship, which is a fairly high standard as well.
It's no accident, like really when you look at it like that, you know. And like that's just, it just shows like you know, Blackrock, I know they were relegated from Premier Intermediate this year, but they had won the Intermediate A County in Carr, you know, like so like a load of them guys have played serious levels all underage up along, and then they go into a good competitive grade in Carr. And like obviously look what I'm talking about with, you know, in terms of our club is a far lower end of the scale in terms of we're our first team are playing at their second team level at the moment, you know, but it's all relative, you know, because like at the end of the day we're playing against teams of our level, so the teams that we're playing against, their second teams are going to be playing the same, roughly the same second team levels as our lads. So we need to improve what's coming behind our immediate area as well, you know. And it's like I said at nearly the start of the podcast, like best practice, whether that's as a senior club, you know, if you're a big club that should be trying to have a senior team and an intermediate team, or for us that's having an intermediate team and a junior team, you know, trying to make them as good as they can be for that age group.
Just keep the gap close as possible as you can.
Yeah.
Between your second team and your first team.
I suppose so. What you're saying is it's the opposite of dodgeball, which is built on violence, exclusion, and degradation.
So I always pick the best kids so you can gang up on Winston here. I was just going to say he's a few fair quotes his name all right now that you'd be slower to align yourself with.
I think that's basically like in the film, like as I said, just back on patches. Like he's a minimal input, really, bar a few one-liners, which we probably won't repeat all of them. I know Massey said you can say what you want, but there's some stuff you can't.
I think we've already pushed the boat out now.
Yeah, I think so there now. We can forget about that now.
But I think like what he did do though was he was knowledgeable in the sport. So he brought that knowledge to the team. In that, like, as you said, they were saying, we need dodge balls. And he was, no, if you dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball. Dodge traffic, you can dodge a ball. So he knew that there was different skill sets needed then to I suppose, improve.
So what you're saying is Patches O'Houlihan was an multi-sports background.
Yes.
So he wants to bring back the dual dodger.
He would back anybody. But like he was, I thought what he did do in the film, though, from a coaching perspective, as I said, which was fairly minimal, is he was very simple and basic in that he kept reiterating the same things. He wasn't over elaborating on what they needed to do. He did keep the simple instructions as simple as possible, I suppose, because he was dealing with a few dummies.
Dodge, duck, dip, dive, and dodge, the five D's.
I suppose he did, it is important, like, I know we say it an awful lot, but it is important to have some bit of a knowledge of the background to, I suppose, to be as good as you can be. I'm not saying we do have an awful lot of coaches that do get involved in GA at a young age, or with their kids who mightn't have a background, but they'd be avid learners, those people. So like let's say a person who never played themselves, they'd really come in with an open mind on what they can do as a coach, whereas a fella like, as I said, Jamie, you're playing, you're after playing 20 years, go back there and coach under 16, sure, you'll be going, who's this fella telling me what to do? I played 20 years, you know. But the ability to, I suppose, that is important, that you're that you are aware of the sport and the rules of it as well, Massey, I suppose, as much as anything else, isn't it?
You need to know the rules, definitely. But I think more we're talking about there, where that you need a good rule man in every club. Like your Frank Murphy, the lads up in Dublin who were able to get Connolly off from two All-Ireland final suspensions, stuff like that. Like
scandalous Massey, how they got them away.
Oh, they went to the High Court, didn't they?
No, I suppose every club has someone like
that. Absolutely, yeah.
who's the one below on Kilwritten, Jamie? Who's the rule book, the man with the has
the knowledge?
Yeah.
In terms of committee side of things, or
yeah, I suppose the committee.
Well, Marion Toohey, in fairness, our secretary, Jesus, the club would fall down if it wasn't for her. I have to ring her, my girlfriend thinks I'm having an affair with Marion, like, the phone is ringing so much of her, like, you know, so, like, it's, oh, you're talking to Marion again, all right, okay. I'm like, yes, I am talking to Marion again, because I need to talk to Marion again about this thing or that thing with training or a match, or Jesus, like, it's even things like organizing challenge games now, you have to get approval from the county board, or else you have to get approval from the Munster Council if it's outside the county, and the clue what I was kind of saying. Yeah. Like, I was there ringing Marion saying, oh, you have a game organized. She's like, what do you mean you have a game organized? No, you don't. Like, I do. She's like, no, you don't. And then, like, all these ring a ref, and I have to get a ref's name, and all this, like, all those kind of things. Like, and like you said, like, you spoke about, you know, the person that gets involved and who's an avid learner, and versus the person who has the knowledge coming in, like, and to be honest, like you know, there's so much discord. This is a tangent to go on for 10 minutes, like, but, you know, the good thing about the people that get involved, you know, with no airs and graces is, like you said, there's a much more open mind. They're a blank canvas, you know. And flip side of that is, you know, like, there's times those of us who are at it long enough are in danger, I think, and we know far more than we do, you know. Even just this weekend now, one of the lads in a WhatsApp group said, at the end of the day's sport yesterday, he said, this weekend has confirmed that I actually know nothing about sport, and I'm never going to pretend to know anything about it ever again. And I'm sure he was after losing a few bob on an accumulator throughout the weekend. But like, it was that kind of vibe of, oh, Jesus, like, we think we know it all sometimes, and we know nothing. Like, so sometimes the person who comes in with that open mind is in a far better position. But like, it, from column A and a little from column B is great. Like, and I think, you know, when you said there, you know, there's 2 points, I suppose. Like, first point is, you're talking about how trying to keep everyone involved in the club in one way or another, it could be an administrator, or it could be, you know, whatever level they get involved in, that they're hugely important. But, you know, like, it's also hugely important, I think, you know, like, you're never going to have enough experts in the club. And I mean this, I don't even mean, like, you know, experts, like, you know, that we all know of. Like, I mean, genuine experts. You're never going to have enough people that have genuine expertise in a club to run every team. So you do need, like, there's no pretending you don't need the well-intentioned parent who mightn't be as up to date on things, or who, you know, the well-intentioned kind of do need them. So your job is to help them as much as you can, and help them putting the guy with the expertise with them, you know, or getting that person with the expertise, you know, maybe in a more directorial role, or in a kind of, you know, in the right roles for them. Just knowing that, yeah, we'll have maybe a former player involved with each team because they have actual on the ground playing knowledge, recent playing knowledge. And we'll have a parent who, you know, is logistically very, very good, but in terms of what's going on in the field, you know, like, it's kind of like, yeah, they're decent, but we'll, you know, probably temper their opinions a small bit. Like, but they're a hugely important part of running a club team, like, you know, running an under 16 club team. Like, you know, you're not going to have former senior players running that under 16 club team. You're going to have someone who needs to, you know, you made a comment about earlier, another piano, a great piano quote, like, there's piano carriers, you know, someone has to carry the piano as well. And, you know, it is very rare you're going to get the four experts willing to carry the piano.
Sure.
You know, you need someone who's going to do the grunt dog work, yeah. Who's going to do that kind of stuff, because it falls apart without them as well.
Yeah. And I suppose even in the film, they, like, they had it, your man, what's your man's name, the he entered them, he knew the rules from the start.
Oh, is he Glenn, or he's a pure Glenn head in him. Like,
we'll call him Glenn.
Yeah. And,
is he Glenn? Oh, it's his name.
But you had Patchesden, who was kind of what words did I use to describe him earlier on? But LeFleur was able to balance his kind of to balance out between the extreme of Patches and his abuse, with LeFleur was very player-centric, and he's the way
Gordon.
Gordon. Yeah, that fits the bill as well. So like it's important as well, like, and I suppose we've talked about it a couple good few times, having a good backroom team. And I know you had an excellent selector with you this year on your backroom team, didn't you, Mr. O'Donoghue?
Mr. O'Donoghue, former teacher, former and current teacher of a lot of the number of our players, former teacher of me as well. First time I met Mr. O'Donoghue was around the back of our local pub, Cashman's, after he won the Junior B football county. And I was 16 years of age and probably shouldn't have been around the back of the pub at that hour. And that was August, and I'd never met more in my life. And I rocked into school about 2 weeks later, and I was like, who is this fella? I was around the back of Cashman's with him last week. But Aidan, great coach, and has the respect of a lot of them as well, because, you know, he's done a lot of work with the Harty, with yourself inside there. And we had an All-Ireland club winner with us as well in Ian Kelleher from Newton Shandrum. So, like, you know, we really did have that kind of that expertise, we'll say, on the sideline. But, you know, like I said, the whole thing would have fallen apart without a guy called Terry O'Regan, who, in fairness, him, to be honest, he has far better hurling knowledge than he's willing to, we'll say, allow. He named him as a selector this year. I think it was because he just didn't want to get any abuse down the pub when the team was picked, Arsenal or something like that. So if anyone in the Irish is listening to it now, you can know that he actually had a very important opinion on the whole thing. But he just drove the van for the year and had all the games and stuff and brought all the stuff. And said he'd do a bit of goalie coaching with us because he was a goalkeeper with us for a couple of years. And said, no, I don't want my name as down as a selector. I just want to do jobs and help it out in whatever way I can. And, you know, like, we were very lucky in that the fella doing the grunt work for us, obviously, you know, knew what was going on. But, like, even if he didn't, you know, a guy doing those jobs, like, I can't bring everything to training every day. You know, I physically can't. Aidan can't, you know, like... Like, you need people doing all these jobs. And if they don't, like, you're in massive trouble. Like, you know, one of the lads' mothers has washed the jerseys for the last 10 years. You know, one of the lads playing for us, like Mary Desmond. You know, like, if they're not washing the jerseys or if Terry's not bringing the stuff to training, like, you know, what are we doing? Like, we're going out. We're going to end up going out playing the game in chokers like the lads in Dodge ball guys, something like that.
And I suppose, like, it is important that, like, I know the first time I was ever looking after a team was an under 14 team in St. Maur's, and we went out to the match, no jerseys, no footballs, no water bottles, to Peregrine's to play a match. And it's just first time. Didn't even think of him. Every time I'd ever gone to a match, all that stuff was always there because there was always a backroom team and people would do it and there was people loved doing it. But it is important that, like, as I said, Shane Keegan and I spoke about them people as well being really, really important. Like,
it's invaluable.
It falls apart about them. Like, you know, 2 years in Kilmallock, it's probably the first time I got a real taste of a senior club there, and you know, it was really, really, really eye-opening and really good for me to see. And there's a guy there called Jed, who, again, like, he makes everyone's life so easy because he ticks so many boxes for you. Like, just the best in the world. Like, you turn up, there's 60 sitters of training. There's every cone. If I, like, me and Jed would start, like, if when I was doing a training session, like, I'd have the whole thing drawn up on a page, and obviously getting around the pitch is a bit harder for me. Jed would have the whole thing mapped out, you know. Like, this was all, like, he'd do all that. He'd have all the cones. He'd have everything, like... He'd have a young lad around with him called Pierce, who is going to be a cracking hurler in a few years' time. He's only 14 last year. But again, just these guys in the club that want to do something. They want to contribute, like, you know. Mm-hmm. And, like, you're just there, like, this club, like, it's, like, obviously the most important thing. No question about that. And as management, sometimes we can think that, geez, the whole thing will fall down without us. But, like, really, like, we're sitting at the top of the pyramid, like, and there's a much more important base underneath us doing a lot more. And, like, it's nothing without these guys. Like, I just found that, like, that was really eye-opening for me, like, was, you know, to see how a senior club was operating, like, and that he was literally, you know, he had this operation for us, like, and it just made life so easy. Like, you were rocking in there and there was 60 balls on the ground, you know, like, set up and ready to rock. Like, it was just something, like, you know, and that side, if it didn't for me, like, this year going home to my club, I was very determined to have that kind of, those simple, you would consider very simple boxes, to have them ticked you know, to really try and, you know, at our intermediate level, but to try and make it feel like a senior club and try and not make it feel like a senior club in an oppressive way. Make guys feel like, geez, this is, you know, a really, you know, well-run thing that I'm part of, and, you know, all the boxes are ticked for me. But, like, you know, those things don't happen without those guys, you know, like the gardens of this world. Like,
Colin, was there a bit method in the madness of going out to the under 14 match without footballs, trying to change the code in St. Moritz?
No, Paul, I wish there was, but no, there wasn't. There wasn't. We played the first half in whatever T-shirt or jersey they were wearing on the way down, and one of the parents arrived in the second half with the jerseys out. Won the game, so it just shows all those things, while they're important, getting 15 men in the pitch who are willing to try the yard is the important.
You were going for a bit of acid there with the no footballs. You want a bit of Mike Bassett with the
that was that was exactly it. Yeah, we spoke about that, about the importance of visualization and stuff in the warm up. But no, it was grand.
Dodgeball's a great game, right? And a great game to be using to kind of develop skills in hurling or football. Have you any other, we'll say, non mainstream sport like that you enjoy using in a coaching session, or just think is interesting to look at?
Your column's a big fan. What's it called? The Indian game column. What's the Kabaddi. Indian game?
Kabaddi. I played that with, we did it with TYs a couple of years ago inside in the school, because the young kids wouldn't get it. The TYs did it, and I was kind of a Rob Dennis stroke thing, to go over and get a ball from the other side and try to get back. And it was, it was good. But I remember one year I just tried to do as much. We did Frisbee, Ultimate Frisbee. So we do ring Frisbee. We played American football, touch American football. This year I got the spike ball. You know the spike ball? I don't know if you've seen the videos.
Yeah, the primary schools are mad about that.
Yeah, so we got that, and we were using it for hurling. So you could be three touch doubles. So I'll be three touches on your side. And we did that before training every night for a couple of weeks until the weather started getting crap and the ground got a bit heavier. But just things like that. But that was, you know what, that was more to get them something more relaxing.
Just a change.
As opposed to any skill.
Handball is always a good one.
Brilliant. Yeah, we actually did that, did a variation on that 2 weeks ago for our non-contact hurling training. So like we wanted to have some sort of pressure, we'll say, on the strike and catch and, you know, opposition. So with two teams against each other. And that basically, if the ball went like you to shake the, we'll say you could intercept, but you couldn't tackle. If you dropped the ball, if the ball hit the ground, you just had to move away from it, and it was move on, like it was turned over ball straight away. So that was like the kind of like trying to, obviously, like those are basic skills like catch, strike, don't drop, like, and that, like trying to do that variation based on Olympic handball on it with our lads, where you couldn't move, stuck it, like you have to look around and play a ball. One that I found actually just funny, like that we've done it in all our warm ups this year. And it was John Brewer, I'd say, with Kilmallock last year, just did it with the lads, and I kind of thought, geez, that's great. Did we just do a tag game with the lads where there's three balls in a box, and we'd say 10 or 11 fellas in the box. You have to catch a fella who doesn't have the ball. So obviously the balls are moving around to fellas who are trying to get away from the tackler. The tackler is just trying to catch a fella and move it on. But it's actually back, and we just found in the warm-ups, even like, you know, Championship Day, lads are very fucking like, you know,
tense
and like, and it kind of just a bit of crack, because lads start cursing at each other for not throwing the ball to each other, and lads start kind of, there's a bit of a, it kind of lightens things a small bit for fighters, but it also, it's like all them basic kind of right, left movements, dynamic, and you're obviously stretching in the middle of each kind of round of it, we'll say, acceleration, deceleration, all these kind of things that, you know, in a dynamic warm-up, just something that we found as well. And then obviously just the cracks that actually made an awful difference to lads, but it was also hitting the things you were trying to get them into the habit of doing. Like when a fella was trying to evade a man, that he was also had his head up for the possibility of getting a pass, which would get him free, you know. So just kind of those things, like, you know, like you said, like just, I think you all are in good, like you're trying to steal things, whether they're from, you know, whether they're for a really, really functional point of view, or whether they're, sometimes they're just to actually, they have a bit of function, but that they actually just chip small, but then really kind of lighten a mood in an area, like, you know. Like, we've done variations on games in hurling where, like, you've got, did you ever watch Gladiators?
Yeah.
In the 90s, like, where, so the one of the games in, Yeah, and one of the games in the Gladiator, well, the Gauntlet now is one where lads get fairly hard.
It's great crack with senior infants.
I remember doing something like that actually as a player, and it was great. It was a good laugh. But there's one of the games in Gladiators where there's like a bin on either end, and they but all the balls are active at the same time. So you're defending and attacking, like there's three balls active at the center or whatever. So I've done variations on that with kind of bins in either area or bins in three corners of the field where there's different or three areas of the field. Just things like that, like just that kind of, especially with younger lads that just want a bit of crack of training, like even, I mean, 21-year-olds, because they're still executing all the stuff, but it's like, I find the 21s, like the most important thing is that they enjoy going training, like because they're particularly at prime dropout age, like, you know, you're at like, how can we make this competitive? Because they like to compete. Fun and different, you know. And I think, you know, well, look, we're not training now. I don't think any of us are allowed to go training too much anymore now for the next 6 weeks. But even, you know, the bits of non-contact training and kind of those regulations on trainings and stuff, they were actually very good for the brain, in the sense you were trying to think up of, right, how can I, you know, move things around to actually to have something still worthwhile, you know, if you're following other kind of ESPN 8, the Ocho kind of sports, they can actually be more useful than mainstream ones, I think.
Big time. ESPN 2.
Sure. Right. Anything else to add, Paul or Massey?
What about the element of the gambling in the show in terms of him spending, him backing him? Like, you hear about it every year about teams like outsiders. Oh, we all fancy ourselves at the start of the year, we all put a bit of money on it. Is that something that you'd encourage or discourage?
Personally, I never liked it, but I actually don't have any problem with fellas that obviously can sensibly gamble, and you know, there's other elements to that whole thing. Fellas that are supposed that it's not a problem for, then there's nothing. But like personally for me, as a player, never liked. Gambling on ourselves to win. I was just kind of never really sat right with me. I just kind of thought
a bit of added pressure onto your teammates or someone who does it themselves. I remember at one stage it was like school games, which is just absolutely ridiculous. I think the law was passed in that you could only do it over the age of 18 then.
Up to very recently you could
very recently
school, on yeah. school games. As a player, actually playing in games, it never really sat right with me. Probably just from a sense of, well, what more motivation do you need to win this game other than actually winning it? You know, like the ultimate is winning this game. You know, morally opposed to gambling. Obviously, there is major issues with it as well, though, like in terms of the havoc it can have on people's lives when it enters in the wrong ways. Like, but just in terms of like the practicalities of like, why would you need to gamble on yourself to win a game? Like, you should theoretically already have all the motivation you need to win that game. For me, it never sat well, not from a moral point of view. What I'm trying to say about that is not like a gambling is wrong point of view, just from a kind of
you should want to win the match rather than having only want to win it because you have money on it.
It should be a non thing to me, but look, I suppose that's probably a wider question, isn't it?
But I would bet on a game, you know, like often people go, well, that's the price of such a game. If the bookies have badly mispriced a game and I have some amount of knowledge going, you know what, they're wrong there, and I'd like to take them up on being wrong, I'd put a bet on. And I've often put a bet on a game where they have that odds of 10-1. I go, well, you know what, that's ridiculous. It should be odds of 5-2 or 3-1 or whatever. They've just mispriced the game. Then I would put a bet on.
It's what the problem is there is, though, that the team who see that the other team is badly priced is that they might back against their own team. People have the issues with the gambling.
Yeah, I don't think there'd be a huge amount of that going on. Hopefully.
Hopefully it doesn't happen. it does and can happen. Which is,
yeah, look, I suppose I'd have been such a call like in the past, but I suppose look, just with from a moral perspective, then like when you see the stories and you see the players, the like Oisin McConville and Niall McNamee and what's left in Galway, Moss?
Davy Glennon
as well. You know, I just think the if we normalise it within the GA and within the dressing room, it's very easy for people to get pulled into it, and it's something that can be hidden away. And I suppose, like as I said, just wouldn't be one for it anymore myself, and I wouldn't encourage.
I think, unfortunately, like you said, like it is, like I have definitely been gay and I'm not involved in. I think the thing is, in the day we have a lot more knowledge of what's going on than the bookies do. Like the club GA is where a lot of money to be made in that gambling side of it, if you have the right knowledge, you know, because you know a lot more than we'll say a big company like Paddy, what's going on at local level. Like, you know, people in Cork find out a lot quicker who's gonna be missing for, you know, Middleton than
the traders
to Dublin and all of a sudden, you know, like, you know, it's kind of like, Jesus, did you hear that Black won to beat Middleton, but Lahan and Luke O'Farrell are both out? It's kind of like, Jesus, that's the bet of the century, you know, like that's kind of very much an Irish thing, isn't it, as well, like where it's kind of like, you know, that small parasite of it. Like, so I think, like you said there, Paul, you said, like, very often the bookies badly misprice a game at club level, probably at club GA level more so than nearly any other thing, I think, you know. And that's where the temptation is as well.
There's the element that, and look, are morally corrupt by nature. I think they're actually quite happy to misprice club GA games because someone could get into it and then think, sure, geez, I know it all.
We're on.
And they're willing to accept the 200 loss on a club game. But then Paul O'Brien thinks he knows it all and sure he's after giving 400 back on county stuff following week or horse racing or soccer or whatever it is. Because they think, oh, this is handy to be making money. And I do think that the bookies do capitalise on that club game of, yeah, we'll give you a little bit, but we're sucking
you. You only ever have one loan, is what my father used to say to me.
Yeah, that's true. But it's nice when a touch comes off.
That is...
Talking about morally corrupt stuff, Colin might say we're happy with the appearance of Lance Armstrong in the film.
Yeah, that hasn't aged well. That hasn't aged well at all.
Like, it's even better.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I was going to agree with Paul here. I actually think it's just, like, in a film that is slapstick from start to finish, it's almost like they actually knew. I just said, yeah, we're done on this. Like, we've got, like, I felt saying the most hypocritical thing in the whole world. Like the neck of that fella to go and do that stuff. Like, Jesus Christ.
It's brilliant. Like, it's brilliant.
He has some neck. Like, do you know about everything else that showed, obviously, how much of a brass neck he had? To actually be going doing films, it's unbelievable, really, when you think about it. Like,
it was just
comedy, right?
What's on him to be president of the United States before he dies?
Speaking of
gambling, what odds on that?
Name your price, I'd say they'd say to you. Name your price.
You go say that about the fella they had there as well.
I know, but that's 20
years ago about the fella and the apprentice.
I know, but your luck is it. Can't
America loves a story, Colin.
Absolutely. It's not the first time I heard it mentioned.
Go on, anything else to add before we go to scoring?
Some brilliant lines to film. One-liners are just fantastic. My favourite one was when Goodman goes to one of his workers, he goes, before he left work, he goes, add 3 pounds to the scales of the women's locker before you go home. it was brilliant.
My favourite one was when, and it was Goodman as well, he goes, facial flirtation. And he waving his hands face, I thought was good.
That was very good. Do you have anything else, Jamie, that sticks out for you?
Jesus, I have a few. I'm going to go for a scene, though, rather than an actual line. It's when it's right before the bride. You might miss it. Sometimes it's Michelle just comes out of the bathroom. And he's just after leaving a massive turd inside the Jackson. Like, could you close that for both of us, baby?
But actually, that's the second time. No, Ben Stiller has kind of had well, I suppose he had more of a role in this, but in Happy Gilmore as well, he had an excellent part.
Yeah, he did.
And it actually just, I don't know if any of you watch Hubie Halloween, which is absolutely complete scutter from Adam Sandler, but that Ben Stiller character is in it for one line at the start of it.
The orderly.
Yeah. So,
and that's his wife in real life, isn't it?
That's Stiller's wife in real life.
Kate is his wife,
Yeah.
Right, go on. What are we giving out of five? Jamie, you can go anything from one or not to 0.5, 0.7, whatever you want out of five.
For the film?
For patches.
Patches.
As a coach. I think, well, like, you know, realistically, he had the respect of his players. They achieved the ultimate. He brought a bunch of ragtag losers to ultimate success, even though his methods were probably dated. So you're going to have to give him 4 out of, I think, you know, with a qualification for, realistically, he'd have been sacked long ago for a litany of homophobic, sexist. I'm sure if you looked hard enough, there's probably a borderline racial remark in there at some point from him. There's only, I can think of 2 of the 3 of them off the top of my head. So, and you're going to have to qualify his coaching in that it probably wouldn't fly in the year 2020.
No, Massey?
I was going to say he wasn't on long enough to rate.
What?
I know. You'd have to give him I'm going to give him a 3.5.
Okay.
Again, he got them in a 3-week period, being absolute bums to winning the Las Vegas championship.
Yeah.
So 3.5, just taking points off him for the way he like wanted to celebrate with his teammates.
Well, I'd actually be the opposite. I'd be giving him a point for that. I'm only gonna give him a 3, and it's a 3 based on other coaches that we've been dealing with.
And I'm going for a 3.5 as well, because as I said, he came in, got them upskilled in the art of the game, and was an inspirational leader. As I said, flawed, massively flawed, but from what we've seen and what we could judge, we go with that. So a solid 3.5 for Patches O'Hoolan, which should get him
just one more thing as well, Colm.
Yeah.
Better commentary team in semi pro or dodgeball?
Semi-pro. There was more of them in semi-pro, wasn't there?
Semi-pro.
Yeah, he is, but like that, semi-pro is way ahead of us.
I think the comedy in semi-pro was more subtle. You'd have to watch semi-pro 3 or 4 times to actually appreciate how much better it is than, like, the dodgeball. They really get their actual line out and they're given the kind of the airtime. Versus semi-pro, it's stuff like, would you mind putting that out? It's very unprofessional. He's like, no, I like to smoke when I drink.
Yeah.
I think lines like that, like, you'd miss the first 3 times you watch it. Like,
Yeah,
it was good film, semi-pro.
Excellent. Right, we'll leave it at that. Thanks very much for your time, Jamie. Throw your Twitter handle there, just if anyone wants to follow you for some of your controversial cranky.
Do you know what? When we went into level 5 tonight, I actually deleted the app and logged off on my phone. I just couldn't be looking at it for a while. But it's Jamwall 7 if anyone wants to get some controversial opinions in the next couple of weeks when I inevitably go back for some more punishment. But for the time being, now I'm going to try and stay off it and get my head stuck in the books for college.
Good man. Fair play. Thanks, Jamie.
Very good. Thanks, Jamie.
Thanks,
appreciate it, Jamie. Thanks, lads.
Cheers, lads.
Thanks for joining us today. Please leave a review on your favourite platform, and if you enjoyed it, tell a friend. You may also want to follow us on Twitter at Roy Orbison Tattoo, and we appreciate any likes, retweets and comments. Next week, we will be watching Clash of the Ash, an Irish movie made in 1987, and we will have the show available first thing Tuesday morning as always. You can get it on YouTube. Thanks, everybody.